Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. If you desire to speak to the host, please press 1 at any time, and the host will be notified that there is a caller in queue. Otherwise, please hold and you will be able to listen to the show.
Across this land, both near and far, throughout the human race, within each beating heart, there is a dream whose time has come for us to claim our birthright, each and every one. Evil hands have intervened, controlling from the shadows, think they can't be seen. But we have eyes, see in the dark, to cast a light upon the madness we embark. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Upon their face, sincerity, while underneath a self-agenda does proceed. But falsity perfumes the air. The sin screams louder than the finest ever there. They'll fill your place with GMOs, and soon your lineage will let us cease to grow. Inject your blood with toxic waste. The world is all but theirs if you'll just die in haste. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Oh.
Welcome to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, speaking to you live from the Vaccine Rights Studios in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. Pleasure to be with you this afternoon, Wednesday, June 18th. Let me see. I believe it's the 18th, if I can count correctly, 2014. We're here every Wednesday afternoon, 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, 4 Mountain, and 3 p.m. Pacific Time. And for an hour, talking about current and recent vaccine news, vaccine topics, and your rights to refuse vaccines in over a dozen different contexts and subcontexts here in the United States where vaccines are mandated. As an attorney in my practice, focusing on vaccine exemptions and waivers, work with clients and other attorneys around the country with exemptions for school, which includes daycare, grade school, college, public, private, military, homeschools, people in the military, which includes not only the military members, but military families who are required to get vaccines, for example, when the military transports them overseas, civilian contractors for the military, a separate category, employment, which primarily concerns and affects healthcare workers around the country being required to get flu shots or lose their job, but that arena is expanding beyond healthcare workers. We'll talk about that more in a little bit. And, of course, is already expanding beyond merely flu vaccines to other vaccines. It's just so insane. And that's not an exaggeration or figure of speech. It's literally crazy because there are multiple mainstream sources that tell us that vaccines don't work. The federal vaccine injury compensation program proves to us that flu vaccines, all vaccines, but flu vaccines for this point in particular, can injure or kill you, as other vaccines can. But I just saw a report today, the latest quarter for which there is a report on statistics from the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, 60% of the payouts have gone to people injured or killed by flu vaccines. And these are cases resolved in the last quarter that took anywhere from 6 months in only one instance to over 6 years, 6.5 or more years, cases to resolve. I don't know what the average is, but at a glance and just making an educated guess, I would say the average is probably somewhere around 2 or 3 years. This system was supposedly designed to be a quick and easy way for people to get compensation following a vaccine injury or death, but it seems for many people it's lengthy and grueling instead of what it was supposedly designed. Supposed to be something a lot simpler than going through the state court tort system, going through state courts in a personal injury case. It was also supposed to free the vaccine manufacturers from liability, which it has done quite successfully. The rest of it doesn't always work so well, but that part of it has worked flawlessly, not surprisingly. Because we wouldn't want the people who are designing these injurious and deadly products to actually have any responsibility for the death and injury caused by their products, would we? In any case, I digress. Also work with immigrants, people immigrating to the U.S. required to get vaccines. And this includes a sort of a subcategory there. Foreign adoptions, if you're adopting a child from China or Europe or wherever, you will be that child will be required to get vaccines to come to the U.S. unless you know and follow the proper immigration waiver procedure. So I work with clients in that arena as well, and just many, many other situations. People who need help avoiding birth vaccines, because there's just no reason in the world why a newborn child needs a hepatitis B vaccine, because there are very few newborn children. In fact, I would go so far as to say zero, with no hesitation, who are intravenous drug users or sexually promiscuous at the age of zero when they're born. So there's no need for hepatitis B vaccine. And in those rare instances where a child could potentially contract hepatitis B from the mother during birth, you can test the mothers to see if they have hepatitis B. And a vaccine's not going to help you once you're exposed. This is a myth that creeps up. You know, you go into the emergency room with a puncture wound or deep cut or something, and they want to give you a tetanus shot. Well, I'm sorry, folks, but this is, you know, vaccine med school 101 kind of stuff, and I can't believe that doctors aren't clearer about this. It takes weeks for the immune response for vaccine to fully take place. It's not like you get a vaccine and then 5 minutes later you have antibodies and you're immune. It can take several days to a few weeks for that process to take place. If you've already been exposed to a pathogen, you've been exposed to tetanus, it's too late for a tetanus vaccine, even if we assume the vaccine works. And that's a highly questionable assumption. But even if we assume it works, it's too late for a vaccine at that point. So the only reason to give you a tetanus vaccine in the emergency room, for example, or a hepatitis B vaccine after you're born, is in case you're exposed in the future. Again, assuming the vaccine works and assuming you survive the vaccine. But now they do have something they can give you in the emergency room. They can give you tetanus antibodies that can protect you for a couple of weeks and potentially help you out from a very recent exposure, but not the vaccine. So it just doesn't even make any sense medically, even if there were a reason to get the vaccine in those situations. But anyway, I also work with clients and their family law attorneys around the country when parents separate or divorce and get in an argument about whether or not to vaccinate the kids. And those cases are all ultimately unique. Everybody's in a unique situation with a unique set of circumstances. But in most of those cases, there are legal arguments as to why the judge can't order the child to be vaccinated. But family law attorneys don't know these arguments because they don't see the see this in their practice, rarely if ever. I mean, so this is not in any way a put down of family law attorneys. I've been one myself in the past. But what clients and attorneys in those situations typically want to do is exactly the opposite of what you should do, and they don't recognize, again, just for lack of time and experience with this area, that particular kind of situation is one in which there are unique arguments unique to the vaccine issue, legal arguments, that don't weigh in favor of the parent, but the exemption, pro-exemption, anti-vaccine parent, but actually are, as a matter of law, reasons why the court can't order the child to be vaccinated. Now, you know, whether a judge decides to follow the law or agree with you or whatever, you know, it's a separate question. But the arguments are there. I've never heard anybody make a counter argument that explains why the arguments that I have are wrong. So I'm going to stick with them until someone convinces me otherwise. But in the real world, judges want to rule for vaccines, not against them. So things play out however they play out, but there are some powerful arguments there. And if you're in that situation, you want to have the best chance possible. And the way to do that is to put together the best legal arguments you can so that you can have the best chance possible there. So anyway, there's just a quick rundown of many of the different areas that I've dealt with clients around the U.S. and around the world, to the extent that I'm dealing with people immigrating into the U.S. Sometimes those people are already here in the U.S., other times they're in foreign countries preparing to move here. But we've got some really interesting, as always, unfolding news. So I'm going to talk the rest of the hour today about some of the recent and current news and some of the legal issues that have come up in and around the news. And if time allows, to get to some questions that people have emailed me. There is some news, one article. Now, most of the news articles that I talk about, most of the time it's probably all of the ones I talk about on this show, are articles that are linked from my vaccine news page on the web. I have two websites right now. I hope to consolidate those into a single website, but at the moment there's still two websites, vaccinerights.com, that's the main one. The news right now is posted at my other website. Now, you can get to this website from a link in the center of my homepage at vaccinerights.com. And the link and the second site are called the Pandemic Response Project. And the Pandemic Response Project has the website. There is those words all spelled out, pandemicresponseproject.com. All of the clever and creative shortened forms of that I could think of were already taken. So I used a website spelling all those things out, pandemicresponseproject.com. And then the row of links at the top of each page, the upper right, has a news link. So these are articles linked from the news page of the Pandemic Response Project at pandemicresponseproject.com. So one of these articles reports and has a short story about a nurse who was paralyzed by a flu vaccine and ultimately got an $11.6 million settlement. Now, as I'm iterating on this show and the other shows that I do and articles that I write, federal government pays out about $100 million a year for vaccine injury and death. And by many reports, that's the tip of the iceberg. It is estimated that as much as 1 to 10%, only 1 to 10% of actually occurring serious adverse events from vaccines get reported, because the American public does not know about, on the whole, the federal vaccine injury compensation program. And I saw a quote from one of the 120-plus attorneys in the U.S. who handle these kinds of cases, and this one particular attorney says they get at least 5 calls a month of people who are asking about this program that compensates people for vaccine injury or death, who are outside of the 3-year statute of limitations. 3-year statute of limitations if you're injured. It's actually 2 years if a family member has been killed by a vaccine. People don't know about this program, and I've had people contact me where they just found out about this program, and it's been many years ago that they had a vaccine injury. And it seems really unfair, but this is the way the system works, that if you don't know about it, too bad, tough luck. Now, Congress took steps to ensure that at least parents, with respect to their children getting vaccines, minor children, as opposed to grown children, when a doctor or other healthcare professional administers a vaccine to a minor child, federal law requires them to provide information to the parent, written information talking about the alleged risks and benefits of vaccines, but also telling them about the vaccine injury compensation program. I don't think doctors are doing that. I mean, I'm sure there are some who are law-abiding, and but I doubt very seriously that there's any sort of really consistent, widespread practice in pediatrics and general family medicine of handing out this information, because if this information was being handed out, then we wouldn't have a situation where 90 to 99% serious vaccine adverse events not being reported. And what also keeps that number so high is doctors telling their patients, no, it had nothing to do with the vaccine, when the doctor is either, and I'm sorry, but I just have to call it like it is, they're either lying or stupid, because you cannot tell whether or not a vaccine is related to any a medical event or condition that happens after the vaccine unless you conduct some sort of scientific or medical test to rule it in or rule it out. You cannot just sort of arbitrarily say, gee, you know, vaccines don't cause that, so it's not the vaccine. But this is what, in practice, what doctors are doing. This is what I hear reports on over and over again from people who contact me and tell me their experiences. And I have people doing that all the time, my phone or email. We have no idea, but what is actually going on in the compensation program now is that there are people who are successful in that system. And here's, again, a story just very recently about a nurse who was paralyzed and was awarded $11.6 million. That's a settlement. That was not a court order that somebody's now going to appeal and we figure out whether or not it sticks. But what's ahead? What's ahead now? The Department of Health and Human Services at the federal level, because a lot of states have a state Department of Health and Human Services, the federal Department of Health and Human Services, in their Healthy People 2020 initiative, state that they have a goal among many, many goals. One of them is vaccinating 90% of healthcare workers in the U.S. So we're well on our way to achieving that goal. Many, many hospitals around the country already achieving that. More and more hospitals implementing flu shot mandates in order to reach that goal, despite the overwhelming evidence from mainstream medical sources that they don't work and they can injure and kill you. But everybody from 6 months old and up, probably, I don't know what, 1 to 2 years after you're dead, I think that you should get a flu shot. obviously, I'm being a little facetious here, but you know, they're so aggressive. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if that becomes part of the policy. And the DHHS, this Healthy People 2020, has a separate goal of vaccinating all adults with the flu shot, and now they're already coming out with formal recommendations for doing other mandating health other sorry, here I'm trying to think to say two different ideas at the same time, and it's just doesn't usually work well. They are recommending other vaccines for healthcare workers, but they are also recommending flu shots for adults other than just healthcare workers. So here are some of the other job sectors outside of healthcare facilities that a new report published by the CDC is now recommending. Of course, we have known this was coming. It's just a matter of there's a plan here being implemented that is figured out way in advance and has goals and actions well beyond what is currently in place, as horrific and alarming as the current ones in place already are. They want to start mandating flu vaccines in the food service industry, education, community and social services, personal care, cleaning and maintenance, and even real estate, because you wouldn't want to go look at a house with a real estate agent if the agent hadn't had their flu shot. You know, the official statistics, now I've heard different figures from different people, but I have read that estimates for rate of Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is a potentially severely debilitating paralytic kind of disease, strikingly similar to polio, actually, to the point to where some have questioned, are they the same thing or not? Are these just labels for groups of symptoms, or are they actually distinctly separate diseases? And I don't have a medical answer for you there. Maybe we can get an expert to comment on that at some point. But in any case, it can be horrible. It can kill you. But the figures I read recently said 1 in 1 million, maybe 1 in 2 million. And if vaccinating 1 million people with flu vaccines caused only one case of Guillain-Barré syndrome and saved one or more people's lives from people from dying from the flu, I suppose you could argue that it's a good trade-off, although I would still argue that people should have the choice to decide whether or not they are going to take their chances with the vaccine or with the flu. But in any event, it's not at all what we see in the real world. I know one physician who saw four cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome in his own practice, three of which resulted in death, by the way. And that would mean he's seeing 4 million to 8 million patients if the quote-unquote official figures are true. And I think that's pretty unlikely. We'll just leave it there. Call it pretty unlikely. So this is really disturbing. What's going on with the flu vaccine, among many other things, because there's a lot of different aspects to the issue. DHHS, the Department of Health and Human Services, is using flu vaccines and healthcare workers as door openers. The flu vaccine already being followed in the healthcare arena now with other mandated vaccines, the DTaP, diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus, and the MMR, measles, mumps, rubella, are now being required, hepatitis B. These vaccines, some or all, are being increasingly required of healthcare workers around the country, not just the flu vaccine. But, of course, they start with the flu vaccine because you got to get that one every year, because the dominant strain of the flu varies year to year, and I guess whatever protection you get from the flu vaccine wears off in a year, because then you got to get the same vaccine the next year, because any given vaccine can have as many as four different strains addressed in the vaccine. But for some reason, you got to get a vaccine every year. Sounds like planned obsolescence to me. They design the vaccine so they don't last very long, so you have to keep getting them. But in any case, there's no other vaccine that I'm aware of that is required or recommended annually. So, of course, they're going to push that one because they can make a lot more money pushing that one. But it's already being followed up in the healthcare arena by other mandated vaccines, and there are literally hundreds of new vaccines in development. So there's no light at the end of this tunnel. There will always be another vaccine to give someone. Meanwhile, the healthcare workers are a door opener in that they are going to be held up as the example for the rest of the country. Look, all your healthcare workers are vaccinated with the flu shot, so obviously it's good for you. They're doing it. They will conveniently not mention that the reason they're doing it is because they'd lose their job if they didn't, and they didn't know that it's possible to refuse the shot on religious grounds or other grounds in the workplace. So we're going to see, unless enough of us speak out and say stop the insanity, we're going to see more and more vaccines required of more and more people for as long into the future as you can imagine or project, because there is no light at the end of this tunnel. There are literally hundreds of new vaccines in the works. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. We're going to go to a break here for a bit, but we'll be back. We've got the entire second half of the show to go. Going to talk more about vaccine news and your rights. So please stick around, and we will be back shortly.
Did you know most Americans know nothing or very little about the legal system? I am the Rose, Rose Colombo, longtime legal activist, legal coach, legal advocate, and the author of Fight Back Legal Abuse, Irwin Award winner, and also my latest political satire, Obamacare Dinosaurs, Rednecks, and Radicals, a political satire exposing the evil agendas of Obamacare and redistribution of wealth that leaves you with a thought-provoking ending. Will mankind survive, or will the U.S. natural-born citizens become extinct? It's available at Amazon.com. You can also visit my website at www.fightbacklegalabuse.com for more information. So order your copy today and empower yourself with knowledge before injustices come knocking on your back door unexpectedly.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
My name is Dr. Eric Norman. I have studied vitamin B12 deficiency for over 35 years. I have developed the urinary MMA test to detect tissue B12 deficiency early, allowing treatment and prevention of permanent disability. B12 deficiency can cause anemia, but also neurologic problems such as spinal cord degeneration, paranoia, and dementia. B12 is found only in animal sources, so vegetarians become deficient. As people age, they may not produce enough stomach acid or intrinsic factor protein for absorption of B12 and become deficient. Up to 10% of seniors may have a normal serum B12 level, but a tissue B12 deficiency causing a 3 times greater risk for heart attack, stroke, or Alzheimer's. For more information, visit B12.com.
Hi, I have a question for you. Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Do you want a company that provides good quality ingredients and does not use artificial sweeteners? Look no further. Genesis Pure has a complete lineup of health and wellness, sports performance, and superfruit juices like Noni and Mangosteen that are pure, wild harvested with no binders and fillers. The philosophy is simple. Cleanse the body of toxins, balance the body's pH and hormones, and build the body nutritionally. Every race has a starting line, and yours is Cleanse, Balance, Build. Sign up for at least a 25% discount and include auto ship of at least one product to start building up 20% back in points for free products. It's a win-win. Help fund our operation while you fund your body nutritionally. Start your journey at genesispure.com/freedomizerhealth. Again, that is genesispure.com /freedomizerhealth.
Play on, play that. Play on, play that. Yo, drink, drop the verse.
I like the way you grow with no pesticides. I got to box it up.
Box it up.
I like the way you grow with so locally. I got to box it up. I like the way you grow with no GMOs. I like the way you twerk it.
No diggity.
No doubt.
We've got squash and peas, pollinator packs for all your bees. Melons you wanna squeeze? Yes, please. Yes, please.
Hey, now that plant looks good.
I wanna grow it. I wanna taste it.
Peaceful belly plant sale 2014.
Search YouTube for Freaks of the Garden. Peacefulbelly.com. Support your local organic farmer.
Okay, we're back with Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. I'm vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. Got a fascinating article here from the Yahoo Finance page of all places. CDC's vaccine safety research is exposed as flawed and falsified in peer-reviewed scientific journal. This is awesome to see because it's it's compelling, appears to be absolutely true, and it's incredibly scathing, just really rakes the CDC over the coals, which they more than deserve for their just absolutely disgusting behavior with respect to vaccines over the years, hiding deliberately problems with vaccines in order to protect the pharmaceutical industry when innocent children are being injured and killed by vaccines unnecessarily, and adults as well, of course, but it's just even all the more egregious when it happens to children, especially newborn children. And newborn children sometimes die from the hepatitis B vaccine that they're given. It's just really horrible. Just months after U.S. Congressman Bill Posey compared the CDC's vaccine safety studies to the Security Exchange Commission's Bernie Madoff scandal, and boy, I think this is an apt analogy here, malfeasance, which means deliberately illegal behavior, criminal behavior here most likely, in the CDC studies of thimerosal-containing vaccines, thimerosal being a substance used as a preservative in vaccines that contains mercury. So malfeasance in the CDC's studies of thimerosal-containing vaccines has, for the first time, been documented in a peer-reviewed scientific journal. So I don't want to try to read the whole article to you, but this is something that's really incredible. The paper opens by citing over 165 studies that have found thimerosal to be harmful, including 16 that reported outcomes in human infants and children that include death, poisoning, allergic reaction, malformations, autoimmune reaction, Wells syndrome, developmental delay, neurodevelopmental disorders, including tics, speech delay, language delay, ADHD, and autism, all things that have been proven to be connected to mercury in the peer-reviewed public medical literature over the last 75 or more years. There's no doubt about the harm that mercury causes. And yet the CDC has kept claiming for years that the mercury in vaccines was not harmful. The problem, and this article refers to, in particular, six CDC studies, which say that the thimerosal in vaccines is safe. But the lead researcher in the medical article we're talking about here, Dr. Brian Hooker, is a biochemist, said of these six CDC studies that each of these papers is fatally flawed from a statistic standpoint, and several of the papers represent issues of scientific malfeasance. For example, important data showing a relationship between thimerosal exposure and autism are withheld from three of these publications. So they just randomly decide to leave out, well, not randomly, very deliberately, leave out evidence that shows the harm of mercury in vaccines, the study showing that, so they can get the answer they want. Now, one of the other researchers on this study, Dr. Boyd Haley, who's an international expert in mercury toxicity, says there's no doubt that authorities in the CDC have initiated and participated in a cover-up of vaccine-induced damage from thimerosal to our children, and I consider this criminal. In the paper, which is titled Methodological Issues and Evidence of Malfeasance in Research Purporting to Show Thimerosal in Vaccines is Safe, it's published on June 6th, and it has eight pages of evidence that the CDC had knowledge of the vaccine preservatives, thimerosal, its neurological, its brain risks, brain damage risks, yet continues to cover them up. Why, CDC? Why are you doing this? Why, whose job or whose money is more important than the lives of innocent children? Whose money and whose job is more important than the lives of innocent children? I'll tell you the answer. Nobody's. These people ought to be in jail. And while I find the use of the death penalty as a response to people who knowingly cause the death of others unnecessarily, something inappropriate in a civilized society, as well as ineffective by studies that have looked at whether or not the death penalty is a deterrent. If there's somebody who should get the death penalty, it would be somebody who knowingly allows innocent children around the country and around the world to continue being hurt and killed unnecessarily to protect their job or their future job prospects or preserve their profits or whatever. No one can call themselves or consider themselves a human being if they would treat other human beings that way. In order to qualify as a human being, and I'm quoting the late Jose Silva, founder of a really marvelous mind training and development program, when he says, to qualify as human, you have to engage in humanitarian acts. And the people who do the opposite of that do not, in my book, qualify as human, and that would apply to the people responsible for the malfeasance being pointed out by Drs. Hooker and Bailey and others, if there were others involved in that study. So it takes a brave person, first of all, to put together a study that's going to call into question the CDC or the pharmaceutical industry, because those people subject themselves to criticism or attacks on them personally, on their careers. So Dr. Hooker, Dr. Haley, my hat is off to you guys, because what you did is a very difficult thing and a very brave thing in today's political world, but such a critical and necessary thing. And may they be blessed for the risk they've taken. And equally intriguing to me is that the publication where this article was published accepted this for publication. There's going to be fallout. There's going to be retaliatory steps taken. We can count on that. I'd be delighted to be wrong about that, of course, but the likelihood is there will be. But may those efforts be ineffective and fall on deaf ears, because what is important here is the lives of our children, not the reputation of a criminal pharmaceutical company or industry or criminal leaders of our federal health agencies. And I'm sure it's not limited to the CDC by any means. We live in a world that's increasingly being and has been taken over by corporations and corporate interests and driven by dollars, not by humanitarian concerns such as the lives and quality of lives of our children and others, adults. So we have to turn that around. We've got to get these psychopaths out of control of our state and federal government, out of control of industry. And that's a lot easier said than done. But people who can engage in actions knowing that they're hurting or killing other people unnecessarily, I mean, these people should be in jail. They should not be running corporations and government agencies. So not everybody in the corporate world or a government agency is a bad person. There are many, many, in fact, the majority of people are probably wonderful people. But you know what? It only takes control of a few key decision-making positions. And nothing that I'm saying here is speculation. The pharmaceutical industry routinely it finds itself with criminal fines in the hundreds of millions of dollars. You don't get a criminal fine unless you violate a criminal law and know you're doing it when you do it. So this is deliberate action on the part of industry leaders. Violating criminal laws, not just a little thing here or there, but up to the level of criminal fines have been as high as $1 billion, billion with a B, and civil fines as high as $2 billion. So this is not exaggeration when I say the pharmaceutical industry routinely engages in criminal behavior. That is fact, objective fact. And yet somehow we keep listening to what they're saying, following what they're doing as though they know what they're doing and are doing the right thing. It's just not, sorry folks, not happening. Dealing with some minor technical issues here. Hope you'll bear with me for a minute, see if I can't get things under control here. Okay, can we get back to the studio, folks? Well, okay, there we go. The webpage display was not functioning properly there for a little bit. We're down to the last few minutes of the show here. Let me see, what else can we talk about? One of the articles posted at the Pandemic Response Project's news page, again, that's pandemicresponseproject.com, is an article recently published at Natural News called Vaccines Child Consent Agenda Pushes Forward. And this is one of my own articles. This is referring to a House bill in the state of New York that would allow children to consent to vaccines. Now, I have written a formal legal analysis of this bill, which is available at vaccinerights.com. Go to the legislative projects page at vaccinerights.com, and the New York article and legal analysis are at the top of the list on that page. But in brief, let me see if I can give you just a rundown of the problems here. This law, well, it violates a number of state and federal laws and constitutional provisions. It's just really, really bad law. And yet there are already laws like this on the books in California and North Carolina. Texas has introduced a bill in the recent past that would be similar. So these are it's really overly aggressive, constitutionally violative bills and laws. So it violates the 14th Amendment's Due Process Clause. Parents have a right, spelled out by about 100 years worth of U.S. Supreme Court cases. We have a right to parent our children. It's a right and an obligation. And the only time the state can intervene is if there is one of a short list of narrow exceptions that apply. For example, if your child is injured at school and bleeding to death, they can treat that child to save their life without having to first track you down at work and get your permission if you're mom or dad. Sort of obvious, but it's worth spelling out. Excuse me. If you are abusing or neglecting your child, the state can step in and take that child away from you to protect that child. The specific abuse and neglect laws are going to vary from state to state, but as a general principle, that's a valid thing for the state to do. But the state cannot pass a law that essentially or in effect says all parents are incompetent to make this decision about vaccinating their children, so we're going to take it away from you. And just to rub salt in the wound, we're going to give that decision to the children because obviously they are capable of handling this when you're not. You know, it's such a simple no-brainer here. Vaccination is a treatment that comes with a risk of injury and death. No child should be making that decision. I don't care how old they are. And the U.S. Supreme Court said in a case about 30 years ago, children, not even adolescents, can make healthcare decisions for themselves. Parents must make those decisions. Now, there are some rare exceptions having to do with maybe birth control or abortion or whatever, that where courts have ruled that older children may, under certain circumstances, make decisions for themselves. And I find those exceptions to the general rule about parental authority potentially troubling. And I'm not going to get off into it. The point is that while there are some exceptions, there are very few. So, in general, the parents have the authority, not anyone else. Now, in some states, there may be laws that say if you are emancipated, an older teenager, but that requires a court proceeding for the judge to decide whether or not you are capable of handling adult decisions and authority and responsibility. But you can potentially become emancipated as a 16 or 17-year-old, and then you have the status as an adult. So that happens. In some cases, if you join the military, maybe you're still 17, you are considered an adult. So that could potentially happen in that situation. So there are some situations where children can exercise authority as an adult, or sometimes if you're married and you're still 17, you will be considered in some states to be an adult and have adult responsibilities and privileges. But with the exception of these narrow few and minor exceptions, children do not have authority to make decisions, and certainly not with a life-threatening, you know, life-risking or permanent disability-risking procedure like a vaccine. So it is crazy, in my humble but adamant opinion, to pass a law letting children decide this for themselves. The federal government also requires, I think I mentioned this earlier, for parents to be given information about vaccine risk and dangers and be made aware of the vaccine injury compensation program before they can vaccinate a minor. So these laws are basically saying telling doctors to violate federal law by letting a child decide. So I could go on and on and on. It's crazy. We're down to the last few seconds here before I play the exit song here. The exit song, by the way, is a song that I've written and produced. It's called Destiny Freedom. And here on Freedomizer is really about the only time I ever play the entire song. So I hope you enjoy that at the beginning and the end of the show here. You've been listening to Vaccines, Your Rights in the U.S. with Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, coming to you from the Vaccine Rights Studios in Asheville, North Carolina. We're here every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern and 3 p.m. Pacific times. And so we're going to close out with the song Destiny Freedom. And we'll see you next week, folks. Thanks for listening.
Across this land, both near and far, throughout the human race, with each beating heart, there is a dream whose time has come for us to claim our birthright, each and every one. Evil hands have intervened, controlling from the shadows, think they can't be seen. But we have eyes, see in the dark, to cast a light upon the madness we embark. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Upon their face, sincerity, while underneath the self-agenda does proceed. But falsity perfumes the air, the sin screams louder than the finest ever there. They'll fill your place with GMOs, and soon your lineage will never cease to grow. Inject your blood with toxic waste. The world is all the fairer if you'll just die in haste. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny.